Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So you know how there is always a day and a podcast in the first week of every Grand Slam where we all say this was the day that this tournament came alive. Well, today was the day that Wimbledon came alive. And lo and behold, it was day one. Yeah. And that's quite rarely the case, I think. But are we all unanimous that today was the day?
Yeah, and I would say it is very specific to the fact that this is the first Wimbledon in 2 years. It just feels to me that it was inevitable.
Ooh, I don't feel that way. I feel like today would have stood up without that.
Well, yeah, it probably would. But the fact that it's the first day, I don't know.
It's an enhancer, sure.
I was sitting there feeling quite emotional on centre court during Andy Murray's match and everything else that was going on, and looking around at the crowd and seeing the involvement and the, I don't know, everything just felt right about it to me.
Yeah, we need to not have another year without Wimbledon. that was clear from today. I think I was surprised by how normal it felt. I think for me, once there were, you know, a large number of fans in the stadium, a large number of fans in the grounds, great matches, then it was inevitable that it was going to be great because it was the first day of Wimbledon for 2 years. I thought there was a possibility it could be a bit flat, terrible weather, maybe none of the matches would catch fire, but that absolutely wasn't the case, and it was kind of lightning in a bottle. At the end of the day, everything was just,
well, that was at the end of the day.
Great momentum
early on. I did think it was weird.
Mm.
If you weren't on centre court,
and there speaks a man that didn't spend 2 hours in a rainy queue.
Well, there spends a man who is sitting on 5 Live waiting to talk on the radio for 5 hours before doing anything because there's nothing to talk about unless you were on centre court. And then suddenly they drafted me in unannounced into Novak Djokovic against Jack Draper for set 3 and 4, which was bloody great fun. But yes, I think you guys had a bit of a more dispiriting couple of hours.
It wasn't an epic start to our Wimbledon comeback, I would say.
I must say, I think it demonstrates how good the end of the day was,
that
I'm not still raging about the morning.
I expected to spend this whole podcast talking about the horror of our morning spent queuing. And I'll only talk about it for another sort of 10 or so minutes. That's how good the rest of the day was.
Year without a queue and year without paper tickets. Mm. And we did both of those things today.
Yeah. Big time.
Isn't that just, though, credentialed duo put in the queue and suddenly realising this isn't actually that great?
No, it is not. Are you asking us to check our queuing privilege, David?
Yes.
No, honestly, there were lots and lots of problems with the new ticketing system.
We encountered numerous stewards on the verge of tears today.
Oh,
yeah, and lots of people who had used the My Wimbledon app to try and share a ticket with someone else, and there were issues. They'd had to set up a ticket resolution queue.
Yeah.
And hundreds of people were
resolution queue? What is a resolution queue? I've never been in one before. Do I need a resolution? What do I need a resolution for? Are you going to solve all my life problems? It was a challenging morning. And, it was all worthwhile.
Totally.
But there were moments when it felt like it could never be worthwhile.
Despair was widespread. Yeah. Just having been on the other side of it, I remember the first day at Queen's the other week, it felt like nothing was going right. And then it started to go better. And I suspect it'll sort itself out. But I mean, yes.
Yeah. And actually, once we were in and I was soaking up the atmosphere, I felt a difference. It did feel different to your standard Wimbledon crowd on day one or on a day that isn't an occasion like a middle Sunday. There was really passionate tennis fans in that crowd, and that is uplifting to know that passionate tennis fans have got their hands on these tickets, I think. It certainly felt like that. Around the grounds today.
I wonder how easy it will be to put the genie back in the bottle next year in that regard, in terms of a slightly more democratic... I know there are some people that think the queue is fantastically democratic. Won't go into the details of that debate now, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether there is a total reversion to the norm next
year. Well, they've already said they will have the queue back, but I feel that they will take the best bits of their experience this year when they've been forced to do other things, and, for instance, the on-court interview, and they'll end up retaining it, I would imagine. By the way, you know how you said it felt really normal? I think one of the reasons it felt normal was because 7,500 people, for instance, in Centre Court were moved forward and they weren't socially distanced, which is quite jarring to look at, I felt.
Yeah, and we had a conversation with a steward, didn't we, about why that was the case, because we were commenting on it, and I think all of us were expecting 7,500 in Centre Court to be socially distanced.
Or else why bother limiting the numbers?
And he said, well, it's a trial event, it's a test event, so...
He said that was always the plan.
It was always the plan to do it this way.
Well, I asked the same question of the press office, and they said the same thing, and that because it's full capacity final weekend, they felt that it's important that spectators were able to sit in the best possible seats in Centre Court, and they were pre-assigned, and that's how they decided to do it.
I mean, sure, but then why bother limiting capacity at all?
I think they were made to, I suppose. But I do agree with you. If they're all bunched together, what difference does it make? Especially when it's indoors.
The test matches staged in India on England's tour there a couple of months ago. The Indian government stated that there could only be 50% capacity, but then the owners of the stadiums just blocked out 50% of the seats, so the 50% capacity were all in one side of the stadium and just completely made a mockery of the whole thing. But anyway, it was jarring to see. But fingers crossed that there are no COVID implications for it. It was wonderful to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it?
And
because the back 10 rows or whatever on Centre Court were all in the dark anyway, because they're underneath that roof. So it just felt like a normal, pretty full crowd. And I mean, the noise, and particularly given the stories they had to get into, and the slightly different feel to the crowd as well. It just felt wonderful, really.
The reason I say that I don't think it was necessarily... I mean, obviously the whole thing was enhanced by the situation that we're all in. Wimbledon not being on last year, everything that goes along with that. But the three matches and the three stories that took place on Centre Court today, those would hold up and stand up as an all-time great day, first day of a slam, anywhere, anytime.
I just feel almost a little bit... I know it sounds ridiculous because I believe in logic and reality, but it felt like it was almost supernatural to me that, that this was just going to happen because of everything that's going on. It just felt all fitted together to me.
Jet Draper definitely read the script, didn't he, of you're on, there's no other tennis on. I know Court 1 was in action, but Arina Sabalenka was busy absolutely destroying Monica Niculescu. So it was like, we're going to throw you on, Jack Draper, to take on everybody's nailed-on favourite to win the title. Good luck. Please, could you create some kind of spectacle for us all?
And he did that before he even started hitting tennis balls.
Totally rose to the occasion.
He comes out of the tunnel, he's pumping his fists at the crowd to get them wound up. He's eyeballing Djokovic at the net during the coin toss. It was really something to behold. It was like watching a boxer eyeballing an opponent. And then he hits him in the practice, in the knock-up, with a serve in the stomach. Sort of apologised, but also had a smile on his face. And then he takes it to Djokovic and wins the first set 6-4. I mean, it's amazing, really. I thought he handled himself really well, and I also thought Djokovic just hit his stride at a point, and just he was like a race car, just accelerating away.
That match will be good for Djokovic in the end, I think. I mean, the sit down after losing that first set, he was swirling with an internal inferno, Novak Djokovic, and he just decided, no, we're not going to do that again. Let's win the sets now. And lo and behold, he did. But Jack Draper did not give up. I was impressed with Jack Draper at Queens. He's shown me something again today. I'm really impressed with him. I there's a lot more about him than I realised, for sure.
Yeah, totally. I will echo what I said at Queens. The challenge now is doing this not at Queens, not at Wimbledon, on those stages.
It's in the middle of nowhere when it's hard and nobody's watching and it's 40 degrees and everything else.
And look,
there's not many points.
And from what we've seen, I think he probably can. It might not be easy straight away, but he's certainly got something about him, hasn't he? I read that Djokovic hit 25 aces or something today and just had an incredible serving performance.
He hit a game. At the end of the third set, he hit a game full of aces.
Wow.
And they were, it was like he was setting up ball cans and just knocking them over in the corners of the service box.
I think that's such an underrated shot in tennis. Novak Djokovic's serve.
Yeah, the recent years.
The way he places it, the way he gets 3 points.
Since Goran came on board, I mean, I don't want to put it all down to Goran, but he's the one who put a massive emphasis on that shot.
There were stressful moments for Djokovic today. There is stress there. I do agree with you that he just won't let it get the better of him this tournament, but there is intense stress.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, he's an extreme competitor anyway. He was internal. What I enjoy about him is there are different versions of him. He was internalizing all of it for quite a while, trying to ride the waves. And the moment he broke through, I think in the third set, when the moment he broke through and got what he wanted when he was under a bit of pressure, he just erupted with celebration, and it was great to see, actually, because he was being pushed in that moment, and yet he found the answer, and then whoosh.
So staying with Centre Court, we've seen at this point not an upset, but a surprisingly great match to kick things off, and then we do get an upset Or was it an upset if you take into account the fact that we all knew that Petra Kvitova had an ankle injury?
I totally forgot she'd had that thing where she fell off the step at the media thing at French Open.
Yeah, but then she did reach a final since then, and she is a two-time Wimbledon champion. I have
disgraced myself today with predictions. I mean, I really did think there was a moment today when Petra Kvitova, who I've said, everybody, will win the title and who's out on the first day, and also Jannik Sinner lost. I'd got him in my quarterfinals. There was a moment where I just thought, I'd quite like to just withdraw because I feel so embarrassed. It's just pathetic.
Is it okay, Matt, just to give Davidson Company throw you under the covet of a bus as well?
Oh, yeah, I copied Pam Shriver and put...
you just wrote Pam Shriver's fault, is it?
We're all under the bus here. Come on, Pam, join us.
Can't wait to see you next week, Pam. here's Matt.
I didn't see much of the match. I saw bits here and there, but I'm very much here for Sloane Stephens being a thing on grass.
I don't think I've ever seen her play on grass before.
Yeah, it was kind of special, actually, to see her on centre court, because it felt like a stage on which she belongs, yet a stage I've never seen her grace before. I mean, I think she probably has played on centre, but I can't remember it, and she certainly hasn't in recent years. And I thought she was exceptional. Just such a smooth...
What was she doing?
...controlled performance. I mean, mainly returning like Novak Djokovic. I mean, putting returns back at Petra Kvitova's feet, which she is not comfortable with at all. And, yeah, just... There was just this control about her, this calmness. It was such a clean, clinical performance. Yeah, I've just been reading some of her press conference transcript, and she's got real perspective now, I think, on her career, and she understands that you are going to have ups and downs, and she's had probably as many as any top player would, and I think she's getting better at managing them and waiting for her tennis to come back, and she knows that it's there. You know, there were great signs in Paris, and... Here again, she started this tournament well, and it's just great to see her kind of glowing like that.
Yeah, I feel like is it the ebb or the flow that's the good bit?
Oh, we've had this conversation before, haven't we?
Whatever the peak is just...
Why would either of them be bad?
Never happened to coincide with when Wimbledon is before, and it just might be. And she's so often what inexperienced players, or more often than not, what inexperienced players on grass fall down on is the movement. It's not the speed of the court. It's the movement. See Stefanos Tsitsipas, who we'll talk about in a moment. And I just feel like Sloane Stephens moves so easily and fluidly and effortlessly that she could
play tennis on anything.
She could be on quicksand.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like Mary Carrillo's line about John McEnroe would win lunar tennis. I feel like Sloane Stephens can move on anything. So look out, she's coming.
Got to back it up though, hasn't she? You know, we've had this before where she wins one or two and then runs into a Barbora Krejcikova.
Yes. Well, let her enjoy the moment, David.
I mean, I'm in no fit state to talk about anybody backing up anything, am I, really? Let's be honest.
Look, we obviously will talk about Andy Murray. His was the match next onto centre court, and it's the one that we're all still kind of basking in the buzz of, I suppose. But while Sloane Stephens was beating Petra Kvitova, Stefanos Tsitsipas was over on court number one, losing in three straight sets to Francis Tiafoe.
My semi-finalist, you mean?
I think...
All of our
collective semi-finalists, who we all have said we've got our doubts about, and yet we... And we all agreed that was a tough draw.
We did
and
sit yet, here last night trying to sort of talk ourselves into picking him to lose, and all of us agreed that he wouldn't.
I just thought Tsitsipas has become such a good tennis player that even if he's still adapting to the grass, his just general tennis level will be enough to take him through this draw. But I was totally wrong about that. Look, I think there's a lot going on in Tsitsipas's life at the moment. His grandmother has just died. He's just lost a really heartbreaking French Open final that can take a while to get over. He's probably not in the best place mentally or emotionally just now. But I think this match, more than anything, felt like a real reminder that he's got a long way to go on grass. I think, look, in my mind, I've grown up in the big three era and the Serena era, and I am accustomed to top tennis players going from clay to grass, making the transition and making it seem pretty easy. But actually, you look at Tsitsipas and you realise, my goodness, clay amplifies all of his strengths, and grass negates them all. I think the movement is a huge part of that. Defending, he doesn't trust himself to defend on grass, so he sort of tries to attack everything. And then the return of serve, he just can't do it on the backhand. He just cannot do it. On the forehand, he was okay. He was hitting some, blocking some nice forehand returns, and it was okay. But in the backhand, no good at all. And I must say, I thought Francis Tiafoe was outstanding, and not outstanding in the way he so often is, which is sort of dazzling tennis and athletic tennis. It was all of that, but it was also really smart tennis.
It's often for a set, isn't it, with him?
Yeah, and you're expecting the errors to start coming, and they never did. And he honed in on the Tsitsipas weakness, that backhand. The number of times he hit it to the Tsitsipas backhand, knew he was going to get a slice, and came in and finished it at the net. It was so simple, such a clear strategy, and yet he just executed it perfectly.
We had that wonderful moment when you were in court one watching this, and you were absolutely wrapped up in it. Catherine was on the hill watching Draper and Djokovic, and you were feeling like a fan. And you hadn't been in that position for such a long time. And I was commentating on it in the Five Live commentary box in Centre Court. And we just had all these different vantage points of these occasions. And it was really, really just a great day in that way. At that point, it was the ultimate.
Yeah. And the crowd were a big part of this win, I thought. Because, you know, it takes something, I think, to be the crowd favourite when you're playing Tsitsipas. He's a guy who connects with crowds, and there's so much to love about his game. And yet, right from the start, it was...
They got him, didn't they?
They really got Tiafoe, and it was him who was the crowd favourite. And he knows how to work a crowd as well.
Yeah, he looked like a teenager again, Tsitsipas, today. It was sulky and so confused.
Brooding.
Yeah, it was. It was. Problems. Why is the stuff that I was doing 2 weeks ago not having the same effect that it did 2 weeks ago?
Is he not adjusting? Is he not trying to change it much?
He didn't look to be, to me. I mean, look, it was one match. Had he found a way to squeak through that, he might have been able to regroup, reassess, and make some adjustments for the next match. But he looked too at sea to me to be making... to be clear-headed enough to make those adjustments.
And you might well be right, Matt, just about the mental space he's in and the emotional space. I mean, he could be really suffering a bit at the moment. But I do think, just generally, in a practical sense, how he is going to be able to learn grass court tennis when he's so focused on maximising and he's going to be contending for years at the French Open. There's so rarely going to be a lot of time for him to get ready.
Yeah, I completely agree. That is going to be a dilemma, I think, for him going forward. Does he does he play warm-up events to Wimbledon on grass if he's gone deep at the French Open? I think this year was slightly different, wasn't it? Because there was there was 1 week less on grass in the calendar, so maybe he can normally sneak in one. But it's not a lot of time, is it, to make I think quite big adjustments.
It depends how committed he is to it. I suspect he will at some stage in his career completely commit to conquering grass, but it's going to take more than just a few little tweaks by the looks of things today. But yeah, Tiafoe was just such a crowd pleaser today.
It's nice to see that, isn't it? That he has found his way again, and he plays with a smile on his face. He plays with joy when he's like that, and he makes you feel joy watching him.
Mm. Yeah, totally. I've been really umming and ahhing throughout his career about how good he could be. I mean, honestly, I sometimes look at him and think, well, there are some technical deficiencies. I'm no expert, but his forehand just looks funky, and
sometimes
is it going to hold
look at
up?
Him and go, this doesn't look right.
Yeah, exactly. It's that feeling, and yet you watch him today and you think, well, sky's the limit. And he said, I've scratched the surface of my potential, were his words in his on-court interview afterwards.
It is definitely working with Wayne Ferreira, isn't it?
Yes.
I think they're a great sort of collaboration. That I mean, we know Wayne a little bit from the Champions Tour. I mean, you know him from the tour days, I guess, David, the tour.
True.
But he's both sort of really got a relaxed energy, but he's also quite a disciplinarian. Yeah. I think he's got hard lines. I think, you know, he's got Tiafoe spending a lot less time on his phone on social media. I think there have been times when he's actually taken his phone off him, you know, with Tiafoe's consent. Like, he's up for it and he acknowledges the time that it's taking up in his life and the energy. But I know he's had a few coaching collaborations for Aaron and with, you know, varying degrees of success, but I've always felt like he just needs to find the right one for it to work. There's a really good coach in there, and this could be it. So really interesting partnership. We stayed on court one, or rather I went from the hill onto court one for the match that followed that one, which was Iga Świątek and Tsu Wei Shea. In terms of the matchup that we hoped it might have been, it never quite caught fire. But I realised that was the first time I've ever seen Iga Świątek play live. And she's really, really good. That was my takeaway from it. She is darn tooting good at tennis.
Yeah, and she was one of these players who you looked at in this draw and thought, well, they could go really far, or they could still be learning grass. And we got a little insight into it in Eastbourne last week. I watched her play Heather Watson, where she looked very uncomfortable on the grass. And then she played a great set, didn't she, against Kasatkina, and then got thrashed. So I was really unsure, but this was a really good performance, I think, from her. She never got caught in Shea's web. She just didn't allow the chaos to happen. She ended the points before Shea was doing her thing. You know, there were occasional nice flashes from Shea. Of course there were, but really it was about Świątek imposing herself and just clinically winning that match. Very impressive.
I thought she looked really comfortable. It was the sort of performance that made me think, why on earth didn't I have her in my quarterfinals? Well, I mean, obviously I should have had her in my quarterfinals, but then, you know, France looked really great in the group stages, didn't they?
Can we move it along? I don't want to talk about the quarterfinals.
Yes.
Or anything like
okay.
that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Should we talk about Andy Murray?
Yes.
Then David and his four-set win over Nicolas Basilashvili, his first singles match at Wimbledon with a metal hip, his first singles win at Wimbledon with a metal hip, his first singles match at Wimbledon since that loss to Sam Querrey
1,464 days ago.
There's a man who's said that on the radio.
Yep, there's a man who's looked up that website. Does the
how many
Querrey
days
to
since?
Today, how many days in between website search.
Mm. And, what else does that website do?
That's the only bit I know.
Where to start with this match, David? I mean, you were commentating on sets 1 and 3.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can move swiftly on to 3, I think. first of all, set 1, I think the most important thing is that I found myself thinking about his tennis most of all, rather than his movement, rather than his physical fitness.
Yeah, well, I joined the match in set 2 and I said to you, could you give me an assessment of set 1, in particular, how was he moving? And you sort of said, I hadn't even really thought about that because he just looked sort of fine.
He just looked like Andy Murray, to be honest, which is great, isn't it? Because honestly, I have been assuming this is the end for quite a while, to be quite honest with you. And I mean, look, he slaps people like me back down in his post-match interview on court. He did not go for the emotion or any of that in the post-match, you know, on-court interview. He went for the, look, I like playing tennis and I'm going to do it. You know, it's kind of, I'm just going to do it.
Instead of just beating the world number 28.
Yeah.
So, and I barely played.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think many other people could have won that fourth set.
Yeah.
But the
amazing quote.
It was a good. He played. It was nip and tuck that first set, and then he struck and he broke, and he was malfunctioning on his slice backhand. But most of the other shots were working pretty well. Second set, it all started to click, and he was toying really with Basilashvili.
And at this stage, Catherine, we were on the hill, and there was a slightly strange atmosphere, considering what you've just said about this being Andy Murray's first match at Wimbledon for 4 years, and now he's got a metal hip. This was quite a monumental thing he was doing, and yet it was kind of like he pulled off his trick of his career, really, which is to make people think that Andy Murray winning is just how things are and how familiar it is. Is that sort of familiarity of Andy Murray being good is what he's done to British tennis, really. And it was kind of felt like, oh, we're back. Andy Murray, two sets up. He's winning a tennis match.
He's part of the big four.
I
wanted to turn around and say,
do you guys realise what you're watching?
You're watching a bloke with a metal hip that everybody thought was showing up here to wave and say goodbye. And maybe he'll end up doing that in the next match or the match after. I don't know. I mean, the recovery. But that is absolutely not what he was doing today. And no. we we came back to my flat in the period of time when they were closing the roof. So maybe the atmosphere on the hill completely changed after Andy Murray squandered that 5-love lead right. in the third set and ended up losing 7 games in a row to lose that set. But I almost felt like that was the reality check that the fans needed.
Oh, yes. It did. Well, in order to, if you want to have the full Andy Murray experience, you have to be gnawing your fingernails down to the knuckle, is the theory.
Yeah, my dad turned to me and said, oh, it's just like watching Tim Henman.
But yeah, he in the third set, it felt pretty much Basilashvili was checking out. It was nigh on tanking. I mean, he wasn't egregious, but he just, his mind was elsewhere. He'd been broken down. That's how it felt. And Murray goes 5-love up. All the shots are working. And then he played 2 quick, loose games. Lost his serve comfortably. Didn't get a match point. Next game, lost it comfortably. And then in the third one, because I'm commentating on this, in the third one, when he lost the first point, and I remember saying, oh, if he loses this game, it might get a bit tense, mightn't it? You know, and Marion Bartoli, who was alongside me, said, yeah, but he's still got another break as well. I think he'll probably be all right. And I thought he'd be all right as well. I thought and then you suddenly saw Basilashvili get interested.
Mm.
And he's going for his shots. Murray's netting balls halfway up the net and is just looking like he's holding a stone club rather than a tennis racket. It looks
so tight,
yes,
wasn't he?
And he had no fluidity, no touch, nothing. And he lost 7 games in a row from 5-love up. He said it's never happened to him in his career before that's happened. But he also pointed out, and this is something we talked about in commentary, is that maybe it's not that surprising. He just has gotten, there's no muscle memory to rely on about how to close out a match.
Yeah, he said, oh, well, it's to be expected given how few matches I've had. And then he said, not many people would have won that 4th set. It was an extraordinarily brilliant post-match interview performance from Andy Murray. He when asked what he did in the roof closure break between sets 3 and 4, he said, I had a shower, I went to toilet.
Not quite like that, but you know.
Just a number one, he pointed out. I'm sorry to have to bring you that news.
Kim's
but
face
it would be
amazing
remiss of
point.
Me not to fill you in on what Andy had to tell us. Yes. Yeah.
And it was one of those special matches. Look, it was excruciating to watch that third set with Murray be so tight, but it also was absorbing. And I love those matches so much on a busy day of a Grand Slam when there's so much else going on and yet all the attention is on this one match. It's a special kind of match for that to happen. And frankly, you know, my attention generally, like I didn't even know that France and Switzerland were playing this unbelievable match in the Euros at the same time. I was just concentrating on Andy Murray trying to close out his first win at Wimbledon in 4 years. And yeah, it was special.
That was the beauty of commentating on the radio. And I was doing inserts in the 4th set into 5Live's live coverage of that France-Switzerland match. And you've suddenly got these incredible sporting moments all happening at the same time. But that, I think that's why I feel so moved by the return of Wimbledon from the pandemic, because that crowd with Andy Murray fighting tooth and nail, and obviously with his career having been so precarious, and of course it still is, but this was a moment of opportunity to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
This was the return of Wimbledon. This was the return of Andy Murray. And all of that combined was just the most intoxicating cocktail of emotion for me. I felt
it was a
so
lot,
moved
wasn't it?
By it.
Mm.
Mm. Well, the good news for Andy Murray and people that are hoping for more of that cocktail is that his next opponent is yet to be decided, because Oscar Otter and Artur Rinderknecht,
I got that pronunciation wrong in commentary then,
are suspended at 9-all in the fifth set and will return tomorrow to resume that match. Could be a 70-68.
Oh, yes.
Who knows?
No, it definitely couldn't.
Oh, no, they don't do that anymore. Catherine, we're about 3 years behind.
Sorry, folks. Anybody that briefly there was hoping for another... sort of five sets worth of Rinderknecht against Otter.
Is there a limit on tiebreak lengths at all?
No.
So it could be 70-68 in the tiebreak.
Thank you, David. Yeah.
Okay. Touché.
Sorted me out there.
We're a team, Catherine.
But anyway, his next opponent will have even less recovery time than him.
I mean, I thought they might put that match on centre and just finish it off tonight, given the way I know tournaments like to keep, you know, players who are scheduled to play each other next on at the same sort of time and that kind of thing in terms of their scheduling. And given there's only 4 or 5 more games left in it, I thought they might, but they didn't.
They popped the Heather Watson match on court number one because that court finished quite early, and Heather Watson, I believed, served for the match in the second set and ended up losing 8-6 in the third to lucky loser Christy Arne. So tough one for her. Katie Swan lost out to Madison Keys, but Katie Bolter got a win today in terms of British women. Garbiñe Muguruza won in 49 minutes today. 6-love, 6-1. At one point, I think it was 6-love, 5-love.
No, she didn't throw her a bone. Garbiñe Muguruza doesn't do that.
I can only assume she was very, very good in that match
against
Fiona Ferro. Rublev won in 4 sets over Federico Del Bonis. Kenin won 4-2 today. Liam Brody won 6-3, 6-4, 6-love against Marco Cecchinato. Look, I know Cecchinato is no clay quarter.
Grass quarter.
But I'm... Yes, he is a clay quarter. But I'm really chuffed for Liam Brody.
Yeah.
That's a moment for him, I think.
It's a huge moment for him. And also, you can't take away the sheer financial implications for these players. These sort of paychecks sustain them for a year, don't they? I mean, a guy like Brody, go back and have a listen to that show that we did with him last year where he's talking about just trying to stay on the tour during that lockdown. And, I mean, it's... I don't want to say it's hand-to-mouth stuff, but he's not making much money at all. And in the last year, his career has probably started to become a bit viable. And you know, he's probably got, well, I don't know what second-round prize money is, but it's first round, 48 grand. So he's probably getting best part of 65 or something like that, you know. And he doesn't do it for that. I don't want to reduce the achievement down to that, but it's a consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Anderson will be the next opponent for Novak Djokovic. He won in 4 sets over Marcelo Tomas Barrios Vera.
That is a name and a half. I'm quite glad he's out. And no offence, but Anderson led Djokovic, didn't he, 2-1 overnight on court one a few years back, I remember.
Yes.
Yeah, and then they played the final 3 years ago, which, judging by a look on your face, David, you have wiped from your memory.
It wasn't memorable.
No.
But it did happen. It wasn't memorable, David, but it did happen. What else happened today? Karen Khachanov won, despite some people's predictions. Was that your prediction,
Matt?
I thought
we'd agreed not to do predictions.
Okay, tonight. All right.
I'd like the record to state that I did get my prediction correct today, despite a general disaster in the overall predictions.
You went for Fucsovics over Sinner?
Correct.
Something else David would like not to dwell on, so we won't. Danielle Collins
won. I don't even
won.
Know what I went for today.
Alejandro... You went for Laura Siegmund.
How did that go? Did she win?
She lost in inside an hour, I think.
I didn't even know that one.
Yeah, 1-3.
Just move on.
For Alexandra Vova Siegmund. Davidovich Fokina lost to Dennis Kudla. Dennis Kudler is still playing tennis.
Apparently,
amazing.
He's a really good grass court player. So yeah. I found out today from somebody.
He's been to the round of 16 here a few times, I think. Well, at least twice, I think.
He beat Dyla Dunn in Nottingham as well, yeah.
No Dyla Dan today, folks, but Dyla Dan will be back tomorrow. Poor Dan of Dyla Dan fame had his match against Feliciano Lopez cancelled for the day because of the rain, so he'll be back tomorrow on a bumper order of play. I'll bring you that in a moment, just talk you through other notable results. Roberto Bautista Agut won in four sets over John Millman. Riley Opelka lost in three sets today to Dominic Kupfer. Only one of those sets was a tiebreaker. 6-2 third set. I just don't understand how Opelka loses by that scoreline on grass to Dominic Kupfer.
I agree with you. That's a head scratcher. And he, I remember it's not the first time. You know, he lost first round in Queens.
I don't get it.
No, I don't really get it. I mean, I know Isner had that run to the semi-finals at Wimbledon, what was that, 2018? But Isner actually has, other than that, hadn't really had any very good results on grass. I think, counterintuitively, they actually prefer the clay. Because I think their serve is still just as impactful, and yet it sort of helps the rest of their game, which maybe just makes them feel better generally.
They want the shoulder-high ball, don't they? I mean, well, shoulder-high for normal
people. Don't
want
to be bending
down. Waist-high for them. But, you know, they like you say, they don't want it around their ankles all the time.
Rybakina won today. As you said, Matt Fucsovics beat Jannik Sinner, so he's a goner. And Victoria Kudermetova, this will make you feel better, David. I think I had Kudermetova in my quarters. And she lost 11-9 in the third today to Victoria Golubic.
No, it doesn't make me feel better.
Okay, how about tomorrow's order of play, David? This might make you feel better. Because this is what we've got. Ash Barty against Carla Suarez Navarro, first up on centre.
Now we're talking.
Then it's Roger Federer against Adrian Mannarino.
Excellent.
And then in the England v Germany shift, it's Alexandra Sasnovich against Serena Williams.
Right. I have no idea what I'm doing tomorrow. I'm doing BBC Telly tomorrow, so I don't really know what I'm doing. By the way, there has to be a chance that Federer triple bagels Mannarino on a high from Switzerland's win. Don't you think?
Oh, it's Switzerland-France.
Correct.
It's a rematch.
Or could it be Mannarino just saying, right then, Roger Federer.
He doesn't strike me as
right then, Roger Federer kind of guy.
To do what Kylian Mbappe failed to do, Adrian Mannarino steps into the breach. Over on court number one, Zverev takes on Griekspoor. Then we have Kerber against Stoyanov. Oh, it's a Germany fest on court number one. Kerber against Stojanovic, second. And then Struff against Medvedev, third.
Oh, that one's going to be good.
Yeah. That's eyes on that one.
Yes. Court number two, Dan Evans against... Oh, sorry. Dyla Dan Evans against Feliciano Lopez, first up. Then it's Benoit Paire and Diego Schwartzman to finish. Schwartzman leading two sets to love. Then Coco Gauff against Fran Jones. Luca Puy against Cameron Norrie. And Elise Cornet versus Bianca Andreescu on court three. Venus Williams, Barbora Krejcikova, Verdasco against Dimitrov, and Felix Auger-Aliassime. Shapovalov's on court 12. Kyrgios Mbeir is third on court 12.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, It's there's a lot, David.
Well, loads of matches got cancelled today, yeah. Didn't they? Or, I mean, I think that they made the right decision because they have to send players home. But it was one of those where it starts to brighten up. You start thinking, actually, you might be able to get a few more matches in here.
Goodness me. Look, tomorrow is going to be an absolute treat. I know the forecast for tomorrow isn't too snazzy. But look, if they can just get half or most of that played, then it's going to be an absolute treat. Because the tournament's caught fire and it will continue to burn brightly. I'm quite sure it's been a heck of a start to the tournament. We've absolutely loved today. We're buzzing, and we're buzzing for 12 more daily tennis podcasts, 12 more newsletters after today. How's Matt's stat for today's newsletter, Matt?
Don't give it away.
There quite literally is nothing to give away. Worrying times. 12:13 a.m. No stat.
A rabbit will be pulled from the hat, folks. Don't worry.
Yes.
We have Mocha, our lovely Chihuahua cross mascot, owned by Dawn. We love Mocha. We have Billie Jean, sponsored by Billie Jean King. That I think the only... Oh, no, Matt, I was going to say the only one of us that didn't fail in the predictions today. But no, Matt's looking smug over there. I failed spectacularly. Apologies to Zeus. David failed, obviously. Apologies to Rogue on his behalf. He's looking sort of too appalled to speak right now. Matt has only smugness to offer to Scales or Mousel right now. We have Chris Albert Lee, our executive producer. David, it's okay. You get to go again tomorrow. Stop despairing.
I don't know whether I can be bothered.
Matt, who are our shout-outs for?
Lindsay Hill.
Like
Lindsay.
Henman Hill.
Yeah.
Like Henman Hill.
Go on, Lindsay.
Oh, that's great. Hello, Lindsay. Thanks for your support.
Nathan Waddle.
Right, Nathan.
Like Chris Waddle.
Different spelling.
How do you know that?
Because he often writes to us.
Oh, right, okay.
He's very nice.
Yes. I often think he's good for the first like on Twitter.
Oh.
Yeah.
He gets in there and he likes posts.
Chris Albert Lee, like, he's a top bloke.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you for your support.
And last one today is Willie Colon.
Right, Willie.
Oh, hello.
How you doing?
Thank you, Willie, for your support. Thank you for listening to our first daily Wimbledon 2021 tennis podcast. Second, if you count the preview, but officially it's the first. It has been an absolute treat. We can't wait to do more. David will pick himself up off the floor. He'll be back tomorrow. He'll be pumped and yes. He'll be making bad predictions again. If you want to read them, subscribe to our newsletter, leave us an iTunes review, tell your friends, wear your merch, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.